magic. Everybody talks about it, but who can actually perform magic? Here's Jamie Ian Swift giving some tips on how to conjure cards at home.
You see, the aces, they actually disappear. Look, I'll run through the deck quick. If you see an ace, you just shout on out, but I'll get a little ticked off. Actually, there's no aces in sight, because to tell the truth, in order to bring them back, I need to return to the fourth principle, what I call the flick. A little flick, you get the black ace back, the first one. Another flick, you get the second black ace. That just leaves the question now of where are the two red aces. Watch closely as I cover the deck. There are the two red aces.
How does he do that? That's Jamie Ian Swift's four principles of card magic. You can look as closely as you want to that video, and you cannot tell how he does all of that magic. Joining us now, Dr. Stephen Macnick and Dr. Susanna Martinez-Conde, co-authors, along with Sandra Blakesley, of Sleights of Mind, What the Neuroscience of Magic Reveals About Our Everyday Deceptions. They are some magic spoilers ahead. If you believe in magic as a force in the universe, you may want to turn down your radio. Brain scientists ruining magic? Is this something we really want to hear this morning, Dr. Stephen Macnick?
No, we're not going to be ruining magic. We're just going to be making it better for all your listeners.
That's great. Magic for peace. Dr. Martinez-Conde, how does the brain lend itself to being fooled by magicians?
Our brain has limited resources. The sheer volume of the brain, the numbers of neuronal connections, the numbers of neurons in the brain. We need to take shortcuts because we cannot absorb and process all of the information that are out there. So our brain does a lot of guesstimation as to what the reality of the world is. And these shortcuts that work so well usually in everyday life, well, magic tricks are designed to take advantage of those guesses and assumptions that, that the brain makes.
So among the things that magicians have to learn then, Dr. Stephen Macnick, is how to, first of all, decode the brain's strategies and shortcuts, as your colleague says, for paying attention without having to focus on everything in the frame, if we're talking about visual acuity. Decode the shortcuts and then use them to fool the people in the audience.
That's right. So you can realize how limited your own visual system is. For instance, if you just hold out your hand directly straight out in front of you with your thumb up,
okay,
and you look at your thumbnail,
got it.
The thumbnail is about the size of the fovea of your retina. Now, the fovea of your retina is the only place where you can see things with high resolution. So when you say I'm looking at something, it means you're putting the fovea on it. Or when you're reading a book, you're using your fovea to see the words. And so you can really only see there. Everywhere else in your visual system, you're basically legally blind, and this part of the visual field is actually only about 0.1% of your entire visual capabilities.
So when a magician goes, all right, take a look, I have a coin, look at this coin in my hand, they're basically rendering the entire audience 99% blind.
Well, basically what they do is if they can get you to look in a certain place, they know you're blind everywhere else, even though people don't really realize that they are, because they think they remember how their brain builds the simulation of reality for them based on where they've looked before, and will build a room, build the magician, build the stage around them as a construct in your mind. And so but the fact is you only have the high resolution data only where you're looking. And so if they can get you to look in the wrong place, they can do whatever they want wherever else they want to.
All right, but Susanna, Dr. Martinez-Conde, how does this work in, say, the trick of, you know, sawing a lady in half or bending a spoon, something like that?
Well, we often look, but we don't see. So first off, I'd say that even besides the fact that we cannot see very well outside of our fovea, there is the fact that we often look, but we don't see because we're not paying attention. And on top of that, there are principles that the brain uses for perceiving everyday life that work in a number of tricks, like sawing the lady in half and bending spoons. These take advantage, basically, of what we call the principles of good continuation. This is a principle discovered by our magician collaborator, Magic Tony. He realized that when several interpretations of a scene are possible, in magic, the brain is always going to choose the one that appears consistent with the perceptual choices that we tend to make every day. Take the case
of... Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me just decode that for a second. So the brain will always choose the most obvious or the simplest? Is that what you're saying?
Let me give you a particular example. With sawing the lady in half, and I'm going here to give a spoiler alert for what comes next.
Right.
The trick wouldn't work very well for the spectator if they realize that very often, the way that the trick is done, the head belongs to an individual, whereas the feet belong to another individual. So, but the brain, that's one possible interpretation. The other interpretation is that the head and the feet belong to the same individual, and that would be the simplest perceptual interpretation that the brain will tend to make in that circumstance, and that's usually aided by the magician having a silhouette or a cartoonish drawing of the woman, a single woman, lying on the side of the box. This aids the preferred interpretation for the magician.
I'm talking to you, Dr. Susana Martinez-Conda. She's the co-author of Sleights of Mind, What the Neuroscience of Magic Reveals About Our Everyday Deceptions. Dr. Stephen Macnick, you also helped write this book. What she's saying there is that the brain is on the side of the magicians here. Describe a neuroscientifically interesting collaboration with Penn and Teller. I'm a big fan of Penn and Teller, and how they do things that are interesting even to neuroscientists.
Yes, so we work with a number of magicians, including Penn and Teller, and one of the things that they can do, for instance, is that they will do tricks where they actually have they'll break the rules of magic, and still they work, okay, and still the tricks work. So, for instance, they'll do a cups and balls trick. And cups and balls are where you have three cups and you'll have three balls, and as you move the cups and balls around, you find that the balls magically transport themselves from under one cup to another.
Right.
To on top, to back under again, and all very mysterious, and it's almost impossible to imagine how it could happen, except for magic. But then what they'll go ahead and do is they'll do the trick again, but they'll do the trick with transparent cups, so you can actually see what's happening in the cups. And so they go do the same exact act again, and yet it still works, even though you can physically see the balls being loaded underneath the cup through sleight of hand. The fact is that you don't notice it because you're so drawn to the other balls that they're trying to get you to pay attention.
And Teller's voice is such a great distractor. Well, before we go, do magicians like you guys in the audience, or they must hate you guys? What is it? They like or hate?
No, they definitely like us. They work with us a lot. They're very interested in all of these things, and they're hoping that we give them input that will help them improve their tricks in the future, and we think we can do that.
All right, Dr. Stephen Macnick and Dr. Susana Martinez-Conda, authors of Sleights of Mind, What the Neuroscience of Magic Reveals About Our Everyday Deceptions. And you know what? I'm going to do a trick right now. I'm John Hockenberry. I'm going to disappear.